Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. It is Monday. That means we are talking about the industry, and I am joined today by the founder of Jason Ryan Creative, Jason Johnson, who is leading the film production for the season 2018, which is two episodes in. The episode three, the finale of the fall, is on the horizon. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Terry, thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. So I'm really excited about this conversation because I think, you know, as the season 2018 has gained some awareness, recognition, notoriety, whatever word you want to describe, I've had a number of people ask me, like, how are you guys doing this? This is really amazing. And the answer, quite simply, is you, your talent, your skills, and everything else that you bring to the table in terms of creating this beautiful, insightful look at these four, you know, prestigious programs in the sport of men's lacrosse: North Carolina, Ohio State, Duke, and Syracuse. And you and I have spent a good deal of time together over the course of the fall, getting to know these programs and getting to know each other. So first things first, I want to set the table for how it is you're able to do what you do. You want to start with your athletic background or your filmmaking background?
Well, I think they're kind of one and the same here, a little bit. So my background, I feel like perfectly prepared me to be embedded with teams. I'm from Seattle, Washington, played quarterback at the University of Arizona, and then went on to play a few years pro, one with Buffalo, three in Canada, two in Europe. So sports is definitely my background, but I always knew, like, from a little kid that I wanted to do something. I wanted to make movies. I mean, we used to borrow my parents' VHS camera that had, like, the huge videotapes in it, and make our own version of, like, Rocky and Star Wars and use action figures and all this stuff. And so I always had that bug to do something in film. I didn't know what that was going to be. And actually, I think we talked about this a little bit on social media, but my junior year at Arizona, I became the starting quarterback. And that year, ESPN decided to film a documentary on our team. And basically exactly what the season 2018 is. And ironically enough, they had a series going at the time that was called The Season. That's not where we got the name for this one. But they followed us for the entire year. And I was one of five main characters because I was the core. And I literally said, this is my internship. This is what I want to do. And I just became fascinated by it. And those guys, you know, kind of took me under their wing, showed me how it is they did it. And a couple years later, launched my own production company, and have been doing it ever since. So it's, I feel like my background is the perfect fusion of both sports and filmmaking.
What was it like being a subject in a series like that? You know, one of the things that you and I have tried to navigate and deal with in this particular project is just making sure that the subjects are comfortable with the goal of what we're trying to produce. Can you recall, you know, it was more than a decade ago, but can you recall, you know, the whether it was skepticism, fear, whatever other type of anxiety you might have felt, you know, when you felt the presence of the camera for the first time and how quickly that melted away?
I mean, I had none of that, but I think that's a testament to my crazy personality. I mean, I honestly freaking loved it. I was like, let's do this. What do you guys want to see? And they had a crew of six following us around, like literally filming every single day. And, you know, they came on the road with us, like, there was one scene that actually made the show where they came back to my apartment, and I used to take my bathroom mirror, like, above the sink, and I would draw up every play we were running for that entire week. Like, let's say we were playing USC or Oregon or someone. And so they had this scene of, like, literally me in my bathroom. And I was like, you know what? For me, I just looked at it as another fun opportunity to tell my story. And I looked at it like, you know, years from now, you know, I have a little son that's 1 year old, you know, now, and I can say, hey, look, daddy was a baller back in the day, and check this out. So I thought it was fun. And at the same time, we were used to having cameras around with the media. So to me, it blended away. And I think that's something we're trying to do with the players at Ohio State and Syracuse and Duke and North Carolina is at first it is awkward, you know, because you're used to just doing you. And now all of a sudden there's an extra body, an extra sort of aura in the room, if you will. But but I think you get used to it pretty fast. And you ask any team that's been on, you know, Hard Knocks in the NFL or whatever, you kind of just become one with the program after a while.
So one thing about your experience at Arizona before we move on, I love this, partly because I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. How did your career end once again?
Well, I know you're a huge Ravens fan, a huge Terrell Suggs fan. But so Arizona, we played Arizona State every year as our final game. And obviously Terrell Suggs is a huge presence on the field. And multiply that by 100 when he was at Arizona State. I mean, this dude was a beast. And so my final game of my college career, we played the rivalry game. I think Suggs sacked me like 6 or 8 times. And actually, it's funny. So the head coach of Arizona State at the time was Dirk Cutter, who's now the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I remember we were down by like 10 points with like a minute to go, just like desperation mode, like have to throw every play. And they're bringing the house, and like no one can block Suggs. I mean, it's literally like playing a game of like touch football where he has a straight run at you. And I remember I went back for a pass. Suggs like lifted me up in the air and slammed me down so hard that my helmet went down over my nose and like crushed my nose, and I had blood like splurting everywhere. And I look up from the sidelines, and Dirk Cutter's like clapping, going, "Yeah, Jason, you like that?" And I was like, "Bring it on!" And in meanwhile, my helmet's like sideways. So one of my best friends went to ASU, so every year on my birthday, he sends me a picture of that play of me getting sacked by Suggs.
Happy birthday, Jason. That's awesome. So moving forward, you talk about what the experience was like setting up your own production company and getting gigs. And, you know, I'm curious as to how you kind of trace the trajectory of your career, particularly with, you know, some of the highlights that our listeners might have seen in terms of your work.
Yeah, I think like anything else, I think people, you know, they look at what I'm doing now, shooting shows for ESPN and CBS and shows like The Season. And, you know, everyone wonders like, okay, well, how do I get into that? And it starts small. You know, I started after I was actually playing in the Canadian Football League when I started my production company in the off season, because I had 6 months off and I would take really small projects at first. You know, I had a buddy that was in the government and we got a small little, you know, couple $1,000 job to shoot this small video, and then it kind of grows. But actually, ironically, I think I've always been trying to parlay this vision of documenting an experience and documenting a season. And so the first, I would call it real project I did was when I was a backup quarterback in the Canadian Football League. So I was playing for the Edmonton Eskimos. It's a proud franchise up there. And I was one of 3 quarterbacks, and my production company was getting some clout, and I had the idea to basically replicate what ESPN did on my Arizona year on our team, but notably within our 3 quarterbacks. So I literally produced a documentary on a pro football team while I was a quarterback, convinced my coach that I was the only one that was going to see the footage, hired a film crew to follow us for 3 weeks of the season, went to Canadian ESPN, sold it to them, and literally produced a documentary while I was still playing football. So, yeah, it was, Terry, you'll appreciate this. So at the time, I didn't even know how to shoot a camera. Like, when you talk about, like, teaching yourself this, like, I didn't even know how to turn a camera on when I first started. I would always hire someone to shoot the camera. I was the director and the editor. The editing on the back end's kind of always been my number one passion, over shooting. And so I literally hired a film crew, and then I mic'd myself up during the game. Like, if my coach knew that, he would have killed me. But I mic'd myself up, and I would signal in the play to tell our starting quarterback what to run, and then I would whisper into my pads and tell all of our camera guys exactly what was going to happen on that play. I got to tell you, it's like the best shot football game of all time. Because our camera guys – and it's like a real game against the Calgary Stampeders, like in our rivalry matchup. So – I produced that. That went off great, and that opened a lot of doors for me. I started shooting commercials for a bunch of Canadian brands, and then eventually we moved back to the U.S. after my Canadian football career ended. And again, just started hustling. And, I mean, I remember my my biggest client to this day is this group called USA Football. They're the nonprofit youth development partner of the NFL, and their job is to make the game of football better and safer for kids. And I literally, my first job for them, I flew down to Dallas, slept on another employee's couch for the week in his hotel. I didn't even have my own hotel room, and I shot for free. And literally based on that film, they hired me for a six-figure huge project. So I feel like a lot of it is luck and preparation, but it's also hard work. And so just kind of through all that, I worked my way up, was introduced to ESPN, when they introduced to CBS, and just kind of, you know, when you get an opportunity, you do the best you can and put all of your heart into it, and things have worked out.
How do you describe your style?
I mean, I've always tried to bring an athlete's perspective into it. You know, I think a lot of people approach projects, you know, saying, all right, we're going to, they already kind of have the story in mind, and then they go and find the subject and kind of tell the story they wanted to tell anyways. I've always felt like my style is trying to bring the athletic experience to life as from the athlete's perspective. And so for me, you know, when you take on a project like the season, where you're trying to capture, you know, what it's like to be a college lacrosse player, I know firsthand what it was like to be a college athlete. And so I want to, you know, show what it's like to be in the locker room before a game. I want to show what it's like, you know, early season practices. I want to show what it's like, you know, when you're dealing with issues like playing time and, you know, triumphs and losses and all these sort of things. So, you know, I think my style is definitely trying to bring the athlete's perspective to the forefront, and then also just trying to shoot stuff as beautifully and cinematically as possible, you know, trying to, you know, at least on this project, especially with lacrosse, is trying to shoot it in a way that it hasn't always been shot, just because of time and resources. So really trying to, you know, create beautiful images that also have some heart behind it.
I want to dive a little deeper on that just for a minute, because I know that there's some folks listening to it that want to nerd out with the names of all the technology that you're using. And I experienced that if you want to betray yourself as a newbie, remark at how novel it is that you guys are using Red cameras, because everybody knows how big of a deal that is, except for if you work in the industry, in which case you're like, yeah, it's just the camera we use. But so visual style, you know, certainly I would say, having experienced sitting in a car for about 25 minutes waiting for a time lapse of the clouds to reveal the exact sun flare that you wanted, I can attest to the ends that you will go to find that beautiful cinematic vision. How do you execute it? What do you use in order to bring it from how it looks to the naked eye to how it looks when it's communicated via whatever screen it is that the audience is watching on?
Yeah, exactly. So we can nerd out a little bit. So we're shooting the season on Red cameras, which there's really two. If you want to talk real film cameras, I mean, I could go on this for hours and hours and hours, but there's basically two cameras right now in the world that they're making 95% of Hollywood movies on. So there's the Arri Alexa, which is arguably the best camera in the world, and right up next with it is Red cameras. And Red is actually a company out of California that was started by the owner of Oakley sunglasses. Not a lot of people know that. So after the guy had made millions, said, all right, I've perfected lenses for the eyes. Let's make lenses for cameras and movies and create a whole new system. So yeah, we're shooting on right now the Epic 8K or the Red Epic W at 8K. So we're literally capturing images in 8K for people to watch on their iPhones at like 480p. So it's like, people are streaming this on the web, and I wish people could see the full 8K experience. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, we're shooting on that, and you know, cameras have changed so much in the last few years. And really, the other thing we're trying to do is not just have good cameras, but have a good movement style. So we're using a tool called the Movi, which is basically a Steadicam. It's technically a handheld gimbal. And what it is you mount your camera on it, and there's a ring that goes around it, and there's three electronic brushless motors that kind of take out all the bumps. So when a guy's walking out to the field and you're shooting him in slow motion and the camera's just kind of floating behind him, that comes from a camera called or a system called the Movi. So we're using the Movi Pro. We're using a couple Red cameras. We're also doing some time lapse. And then, of course, the fun last toy is the drone. So we're always trying to throw the drone up in the air and get some sick aerials. If it was up to some of the guys at STX, I think maybe the entire episode would be drone.
I want to expound on that because I know as it relates to your resume as the most interesting man in the world, a advanced knowledge and understanding of drone technology is one of those line items. What is your passion and where do you see drone technology going based on where it's been?
Oh man, that's such an interesting question. I mean, the drone market is exploding, and obviously, you know, you could just look around at companies like DJI, you know, that have increased in value by like $4 billion. I was early on in the drone game. You know, I bought the very first DJI Phantom 1. And of course, I don't test it on a field. I'm going on a vacation to Hawaii. I bring the drone with me. My first flight is over the Pacific Ocean, and it never comes back. That's literally how I started with drones, was losing my drone into the Pacific Ocean. But, yeah, I think drone technology has come a long way. Like every 6 months to a year, it's almost as if the user experience and the cameras and the whole systems are like in efficiency. And so drones are here to stay. It's funny, like you hear drone and so much of the country, it's funny, kind of has like a bad taste of drones. But I don't understand. Like everyone thinks they're being spied on. There's so many times like, you've had people come out, yell at you for flying your drone and stuff. But, you know, drones are, and the cameras are getting better and better and better. We're using a couple different ones on the season. We're using they have a small little one. Literally, it fits into your pocket. It's called the DJI Mavic. Shoots in 4K. It's just awesome. We're also using the Phantom 4 Pro, and there's another one called the Inspire 2, which is a lot bigger. So drones for me are a big passion. I'm actually working on a new company called DroneInsurance.com that's going to launch shortly in the new year. That's going to help people, you know, get on-demand insurance for their drones when they want to fly, because there is a lot of liability when you fly, protecting, you know, people and property and things. But I think honestly, where you're going to see drones, I know we've kind of gone on a tangent here, but I really think you're going to see drones just become an accepted part of a lot of industries. You're seeing it right now in agriculture. I worked with a company called Precision Hawk that does agriculture drones that you literally chuck it up in the air. It flies a matrix over your crops and can tell you where the bugs are. It can tell you how many trees you have. I mean, it's like mind-blowing. They just sold for like $75 million or something like that. I mean, it's like drones are here to stay, and it's fun to be a part of this whole revolution, if you will.
Very good. Well, I think that's enough nerding out. Let's bring this back to lacrosse for our listeners who showed up for that. I want to start with, you know, your basic impression. Obviously, you've shot lacrosse before, but never to this extent. And what is your first impression of the game, you know, kind of the movement, and realizing that you've shot more practice than you have actual competitions, you know, what are the types of things that have just really popped when you've captured them on camera?
Well, I think the first thing that pops out is the speed of the game when you're up close with it. And you and I have talked about that at a number of places. It's one thing to sit in the stands and watch a lacrosse game. And I've seen a lot of lacrosse from afar before this, but I personally have never been like on the field with super high level college athletes that are at the peak of their game. And I've been incredibly impressed with the skill, with the physicality. You know, we were at the Brescia game a few weeks ago, and, you know, it is physical out there, and you're seeing these guys putting everything into it. And then also just the culture of it, the brotherhood, to me is something I think the viewers are going to see a lot of this spring, is there really is this bond that's formed between these guys. I mean, they're up at 6 in the morning, they're lifting weights, they're running, they're grinding all fall, and they really do become brothers. And I think unlike any other sport, maybe even, you know, the freshmen are such a big part of things. They get thrust into the mix immediately, and their skill level is such that most of them are, you know, guys are going to contribute right away. It's not the same in football. Usually it takes a guy a couple years to be ready to compete in college at football. But, you know, I've just been really impressed by the brotherhood. And I think my other big impression, you know, and what's interesting about the season, and maybe we can dive into this a little bit, is, you know, the personalities of the teams they're all in the top 10, and yet they're all so different when it comes to both personality and methodology, if you will, with how they get there.
I mean, that is exactly where I wanted to go next. So let's go program by program. And you know, because of the fact that you entered each of these experiences relatively raw, I would imagine that, you know, your kind of first impressions of the personalities, whether they be the coaches, the players, or some of the support staff, would be, you know, really, really new and fresh. Let's just go alphabetically for the purposes of fairness. And starting with Duke, it's the program at which we've spent the least amount of time, which is a natural outgrowth of the fact that they don't play external competition in the fall and the way in which they develop their storylines. You know, that being said, you've been there, I believe, twice, or if not twice, then three times, you know, for at least a you know, several hour stretch. What has been your impression of the Duke Blue Devils?
Yeah, you know, Duke is obviously, when you walk on the field there, you can just see the skill of all their players. I mean, they're a very, very skilled team. They're also very physical. You know, when you look at, especially on the back end, some of their defenders really bring a level of athleticism to the game. They got a bunch of guys that are former football players, you know, with Ben Rapphorst, whose dad was at ASU, and a bunch of their other guys. So I had a great impression there from their team. Spent some time miking up Matt Danowski and watching how he's working with some of their younger guys, especially, you know, some of their shooters and things like that. And you know, I was really impressed with the Duke program. And like you said, it's the challenge for this is us covering four teams equally, and we want to obviously bring all of their stories to life. And just when Duke, you know, doesn't play a lot of games in the fall, and that's a conscious choice because of the way that they set up their spring schedule. So we didn't really get this. I feel like I haven't really fully gotten a glimpse of what this team's going to be. But I can't tell you, this senior class especially, they got a chip on their shoulder trying to get back to the Final Four. And I think, you know, for them, you know, as a storyteller, as a producer, director, you know, you sit down and on paper, these are real people, but they all have, you know, something they have to prove, and you're trying to find, you know, what they call a character arc, which is, you know, where a start, where he's going to end, and what he's going to go through. You know, for this Duke team, it's really the question of, you know, can they finally get back to the Final Four? And so that's going to be fun to watch all spring long.
Moving on, North Carolina is probably at the opposite end of the spectrum in the sense that you've gotten the opportunity to spend the most time with them, cooking pancakes with some of the players on a Saturday morning and visiting Taco Tuesday night in the Bresci household. What's been your impression of the Tar Heels?
You know, the Tar Heels are, I mean, Coach Bresci says it himself, but it's literally family. Like, you walk in there, it is a family atmosphere. There's a sort of confidence that comes, and granted, they obviously won the national championship 2 years ago. They don't have that same, you know, Duke kind of has that we need to do it now sort of feel, and North Carolina kind of has a little bit of a, you know, a confidence that comes from having done it before. And there's just an overall, I feel like camaraderie within the guys on the team that's really strong there. And so I've been really impressed with North Carolina throughout. And it was a privilege. I know people got to see a glimpse of Coach Bresci and his story in episode two. And, you know, there's certain times as filmmakers and as, you know, storytellers that we come across, you know, a really inspiring story, and, you know, getting to tell that story of what Ohio State and North Carolina have done to commemorate such a tragic event that Coach lost his son at an early age, and what they've been able to do with it. Yeah, I was really, really, really inspired by those guys. It was actually funny. I was editing episode two, and there's a speech in episode two where, you know, people that have seen the episode, the coach at, what's his name, the high school?
Brian Kelly at Calvert Hall, yep.
Brian Kelly. So Brian Kelly is giving the opening, introduction to the fans about what the game's about, and his microphone goes out. Like, the PA system literally goes out. He kind of throws the microphone down, and he walks forward, and he just starts screaming this story. How, you know, Coach Bresci, where the thumbs up comes from, that they call the game thumbs up. And he's telling them how, you know, Coach used to go in his room, and every night, you know, his little son up and say, "Dad, thumbs up." Like, I have a 1-year-old son. I'm literally editing this, and like tears are in my eyes. And my wife like brings me lunch in my office. She's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm like, "Look at this right now!" And I was dying. Anyways, sorry for the tangent, but all that to be said, North Carolina has a special emotion already, and I love their family atmosphere.
I mean, no need to apologize for the tangent. I think everybody feels a little bit more comfort in hearing you say it, because you weren't the only one that had that reaction when they saw it on the first time in episode 2. But you bring up Ohio State, another program with which you've been able to spend a decent amount of time. And I think that, you know, that's a team and a program that, you know, really does seem to emanate in a strong way out of its coach and Nick Myers and his personality. So what has been your takeaway from your visits to Columbus?
Yeah, you know, I've had a great time so far in Columbus. Obviously, Ohio State has been an amazing story over the last couple of years, their rise to make it all the way to the national championship game last year. And, you know, I think a thing you see is that every program takes its personality from its coach. Essentially, obviously, the coach at the college level in any sport is such a strong figure. And no more is that seen than at Ohio State, where, you know, Coach Myers has an amazing energy. He has an amazing attention to detail. It's funny, actually. I think even last episode, you see his intensity in practice and how he's driving these guys. It's really cool to watch this team come together. I mean, I think they're definitely a squad that's not going to have the hangover when you make it to the championship game. I mean, obviously they didn't win, so that kind of gives them some added motivation. But every single practice has a purpose. And the way you see Coach Myers coach and his attention to detail, you just know that Ohio State's going to be ready for any game, any challenge, and that he's developing mental toughness in these guys. And, you know, so I think of any of the programs, you know, I talked about how, you know, their personalities are different. Also, their methodology is a little different. You know, the way they practice is so intense, and I think that's really cool to see. And I think it's a big reason why they've been so successful the last couple of years.
And then, lastly, Syracuse, obviously a very unique fall, given the fact that they had to, you know, essentially suspend operations for almost a month due to a health scare with an outbreak of mumps. A couple of members of the team were affected, but I do know that they recently started back up, and you were able to get on campus a couple weeks ago. What's your sense of the Orange and what this fall has been for the team?
Yeah, you know, I think Syracuse, the word that instantly comes to mind for anyone when it comes to Syracuse is legacy, and the, you know, dating all the way back to, you know, Roy Simmons Sr. in 1916, supposedly jumping off a train and picking up a lacrosse stick and starting to play. And it was tough for us, you know, in documenting this, because when we initially laid out our plan for the fall and what we were going to shoot for the season, you know, we had three or four like big events that were going to be really cool, of them, you know, different games they were playing and, you know, doing different things. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the mumps of all things shuts them down. And so, like any other, you know, time, you got to kind of audible and figure out a plan. And so we weren't able to spend as much time with them this fall just because of, you know, logistical issues. But we just got back out there. We filmed with them last week, and had a great time with them, and really started to dive into that legacy piece. They have, you know, obviously four generations of Simmons family members, culminating in Ryan, who's a senior this year. So episode 3, just a little bit of a teaser for those of you listening to the podcast, you're going to see the story of Ryan Simmons and how he really is this fourth generation, and what this final season is going to mean for him, which is going to be pretty cool. And also, but you see it even at the other level. They have three freshmen on their team whose dads were All-Americans and national champions on Syracuse. So there really is a sense of legacy there that you see. And I think that gives the team, you know, just a sense of confidence that they go in that, you know, this is who they are. This is what they do. And I know they, too, are looking to get back to the Final Four, and I wouldn't be shocked if they didn't make it.
Well, Jason Johnson, we really appreciate your time. We know you're a super busy guy, jumping all around the country and all around the world. We didn't even get an opportunity to talk about your trip to Liberia and some of the other places that your camera has taken you. But we, like I said, really appreciate your time, and we hope to have you again on in the spring when these storylines start to develop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to, before I get off, I just want to thank everyone for watching and participating. I think this is a really unique project. I've been involved in a lot of projects like this that were just one dimensional. That was, we would produce something and put it out there. But, you know, our hope for the season, especially as it goes into the spring, is that people get involved. It's not just our episodes that are coming out. It's your own content. It's social media. It's behind the scenes. It's podcasts like this. And so, yeah, I just want to say thank you so much to the whole lacrosse community. And I would say, let's all get involved and make this season the best ever.
So we want to thank Jason for joining us on the Inside Lacrosse Industry Podcast. And before we move on, Jason called us from the parking lot of Beaver Stadium in Corvallis, Oregon, where he was getting ready to shoot the Oregon State Beavers home field as part of a project that he was working on. I believe Brandon Cooks was the subject of that one. And, well, the Civil War is coming up, or depending on when you listen to this, it just occurred. And if you needed tickets to that, the best place to head would be SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better way, a simpler way, with SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events, and with their seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have SeatGeek. I have used it. I used it last year for the Ohio State-Michigan game. Took my dad to his first Ohio State game since, I believe, 1974. And what a game it was. That one was the one that went to overtime. Ohio State fans rushed the field. It was amazing. We were able to get out of there. Super easy because there were like 60,000 fans on the field that weren't in the exits. And I use SeatGeek to buy those tickets. It saves time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for the buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, sports, concerts, comedy, and theater. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LACROSSE today. That's promo code LACROSSE for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I have used this promo code situation, and I got the $20 off my first purchase activation. So I can vouch for the fact that if you use LACROSSE, not only will you tell the executives at SeatGeek how awesome our sport is and how huge our audience is, you will also get $20 off your first purchase. So I highly recommend that you do it. Going to talk now to a guy who can appreciate the marketing that was just done. Joel Lehman, you are the lacrosse director or marketing director of lacrosse marketing for STX. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes.
Yes. Nailed it.
Yes.
Joel, thank you so much for joining us here in the close quarters of the Inside Lacrosse podcast studio.
Absolutely.
We just talked to Jason Johnson. He is a character all his own, one you know all too well.
Yep.
And we talked about his diverse background, what has made him an incredible asset to the season 2018 project. But despite the fact that so much rightful attention is paid to the 10 chapter series, of which two have aired and one is imminently forthcoming, there's so much more to it than this. And in order to make sure that the audience fully understands exactly what the season 2018 project entails, it felt like now is the right time to let people know what we've done and what we hope to accomplish. So to start, you know, I think a lot of people want to know, like, where did this come from, right? You know, where did the idea come from? And I think, you know, from my point of view, and I'm curious to your reaction, you know, basically, Inside Lacrosse and STX were talking about ways that we could work together. You know, we said that the high-profile video project was something that was really appealing to us, and you guys were like, this is great. We got the content. We got the guy that can handle it. You had worked with Jason previously, and obviously as part of your college lacrosse partnerships, certainly some of the most prestigious programs in the game, you know, a joint Inside Lacrosse effort in approaching these four teams would probably yield some really, really great access and some really great content. So, you know, this is a conversation that happened fast, man. We started it in August, and we were off and running by early September. How did it unfold from your perspective?
Well, like you said, you guys first approached us and said, you know, you're looking to do something different. We're always looking to do something different. I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, as you know, Terry, you know, our core consumer, that elite 15, 16, 17-year-old teenage lacrosse player, is inundated daily with content, with anyone and everyone trying to grab their attention. So we really, you know, we've been talking a lot on the marketing side of STX of like, what can we do that's different beyond our product, just from a content standpoint, that's really going to stand out. So when you guys first approach us about the idea, it was, you know, like you said, it happened fast, but it was almost a no-brainer. Once we got the numbers figured out and the logistics of it all, and, you know, got Jason on board, it was almost a no-brainer. So for us, you know, we have these partnerships with these teams, you know, four of the top teams, programs in the country. Again, bringing Jason on board is with his production value, and, you know, he's worked with us for a long time. I've worked with Jason even prior to my time at STX, so we knew what he could bring to the table, and said, let's do it.
The guiding light for me has been a comment that Ed Saunders, one of your colleagues in the marketing department at STX, made, which is, we want to do something that the sport has never seen before.
Right.
And so now that we've started to see some of the product come out, what stands out in your memory? What have you seen that you're like, man, the sport has never seen this before? And I want to provide the caveat that this is only the beginning.
You right.
know, we're nominally 20% of the way in, but yeah. I would say we're far less than that. Yeah. There's so much more that's in store for this
sport. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was actually thinking on the way here too, like you said, we're just getting started, and I think we're already really excited about what we've seen. And it's not just, you know, it's not just these 10 episodes. That's kind of the core of the season, but there's so much more we want to do around it, whether it's podcasts like this or, you know, editorial pieces that you and your team have written.
A lot of social media activation.
Yeah, exactly. Social media, hopefully some user-generated content, you know, content from the teams themselves that they send us. So we're just getting started. We're just scratching the surface, and I think that's what's probably most exciting for us and for all of us is, you know, the best is yet to come. But I think as far as what I've seen so far, I think what's really interesting, and I think that the goal of this, the whole thing, is just showing people how much really goes into the season. And you said it best in your kind of opening piece that you wrote for it, was it's so much more than just Saturdays in the spring. There's so much more to it than that, that goes into it. And that's, you know, it's any college sport, any sport in general, but especially elite college lacrosse. You know, they're on campus in the fall and they're starting right away. I think, you know, just even in going to the Bresci game and being there, Ohio State and UNC a month or so ago, seeing how hard those guys went, they were treating it like it was, you know, a game in May. They didn't treat it just like, you know, it was just a little scrimmage, we're just gonna get together, it's for a great cause. They went hard. Those guys were not holding back. So that was cool to see. So again, I think it's just really interesting to see how these teams prepare, starting in October, September, even earlier, for, and it kind of culminates in May. It's really cool.
For me, it was wild to go to each of these campuses for a day or two in September. You know, I think the first visit was September 10th, and the last was September 24th or so. And then to wait for Jason to produce what he had done. I had an idea of what it was going to look like, but it was still about a two-week lag where it was like, oh, man, what is this going to look like? And then I opened up the email when it first arrived. And I think, you know, it was probably in the first, like, 30 to 45 seconds, there was a drone shot of a and we know your affinity for drone shots. There was a drone shot of Syracuse practice, and it had one of the temporary creases, you know, the orange ribbon around the crease, and it was just like, oh, here we go. This is exactly like, and it's not to say that, you know, we haven't seen a lot of drones all over, you know, content everywhere and in the sport of lacrosse, but it was like when you use that as part of the overall portfolio. You know, I make fun of Jason all the time for his infatuation with sun flares, but it's the full package, right? You know, the audio quality and everything else it just gets you juiced up.
Yeah. So again, like I've worked with Jason for a long time, so I obviously knew what to expect. I know what he brings to the table. He, you know, he does a lot of stuff for ESPN and for CBS Sports. He's a former collegiate athlete himself. You know, played even in the pro ranks in the NFL and the CFL. So he has that mentality. He knows exactly what these guys are going through for, you know, in a lot of ways. And on top of that, he's just a creative guy. He's a storyteller. That's what I love about him. He's a storyteller. Like, you don't have to give him a lot of direction. You just kind of give him, hey, Jason, here's what we're looking to do. Yep, got it. And then you just send him off, and he just, you know, he captures stuff that he just has an eye for things. Like I said, he just knows how to get the cool shots and kind of pull the story out of the people that you're trying to tell in a meaningful way. And it's not contrived or overproduced. It's just really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, like I said, there's so much more to come. Before we get to, you know, maybe what the next episode and the Seven Spring episodes chapters hold in store. Like I said, a multifaceted approach and all housed on theseason2018.com.
Yep.
What have you seen as this website has gone through two development iterations that you want folks to know? You know, this is what's available and this is what you should be checking out.
Yeah. So, like you said, when we first launched the first episode, it was kind of a, you know, phase one of the site. And then when we launched the second episode, that's when the full site was kind of really unfolded. So it's just a different kind of experience. And we want, you know, it really just serves as the hub of everything that we're doing. So again, whether it's the main episodes, whether it's kind of secondary, what we're calling tier two content, videos, social media content, again, editorial pieces, social media stuff that either we upload or the other teams upload, it's all right there. We just want everyone to know, like, you know, that's where you need to go. Obviously, Inside the Cross and SCX.com and other places as well, but the season 2018 is really the central hub.
16,000 views on the chapter two thumbs up episode, 1,400 subscribers to the season 2018 YouTube channel. What's been your reaction to the reaction?
I think it's cool just to see as soon as we release something, whether it's an episode or just other content, a lot of kids are saying, wow, this is awesome. When's the next episode coming out? When's the next episode coming out? We want to see more. I wish it was longer. Like, we wish we could do hour long Hard Knocks episodes too, but, you know, it's just a matter of time and everything else. But I think that's cool to see when, you know, people are excited or asking for more instantly, you know, you've got people hooked. And, you know, the fact that we've had, you know, that many views already in just a short amount of time on basically, you know,
something that really appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
This entire entity, the season, is an entity, and it was built from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, you know, partnering with you guys are the industry leaders in what you do in terms of the media coverage, and we've got, you know, our fans on the brand side as well, on the product side. But yeah, the fact that we kind of created this channel in between and seeing the people that are jumping on board already, and again, we're just getting started. So I think once we get into the meat of the season, the spring, and the wins and the losses start happening and the stories really start to build, I think that's really what you're going to see even more.
And having had a lot of conversations with Jason, I know one of his big priorities, both for, you know, the third chapter is going to represent the end of fall, and yeah. You know, there's a lot of capstone content around that, but he really wants to emphasize the camaraderie of these teams and yeah. what these players experience and feel playing alongside each other. So I think that it's really going to be engaging in a way, you know, that's similar to you know, what we spoke about with respect to the emotion of Brian Kelly's speech during the introduction to the Thumbs Up event in October. And so, you know, transitioning and translating that into, you know, the good times, the happy times, the laughs, all that sort of stuff, the yep. inside jokes, everything else that makes being a college lacrosse player something that is not just even about holding a stick in your hands. You know, we talk about how the season is so much more than Saturdays in the spring. Being a college lacrosse player is so much more than even just being a lacrosse player. It's right. about being a member of a team, you know, and creating relationships that, you know, for almost every person that plays, you know, a college sport, but certainly college lacrosse because of the size of the teams, you know, just a network of friends for the rest of their lives. And it's going to be really exciting to see, because as you say, you know, Jason's capacity for telling those stories is really, really high. And it's going to be exciting to see how everything comes together and comes to fruition. But as we transition to the springtime, you know, what are some of the things that has you most excited?
You know, I think just kind of developing some more of those characters, some more getting to know either the players or the coaches, on just more of a personal level, I guess, beyond just, you know, we don't want to just go and film practices all day and show game highlights. Like, obviously that's part of the story, but there's so much more to it. Like you said, we want to get to know them a little bit more just as human beings, you know, what makes them tick off the field, or, you know, what do the guys do for fun when they're not at practice and they're not at class and in between games, and what do they do to kind of unwind and take their minds off lacrosse, you know, for an hour or two a day. So that kind of stuff, I think, is always really interesting to people. That's what makes shows like Hard Knocks and 24/7 and some of the other, you know, sports documentary type of content interesting is building those personalities and getting to know those people beyond just, you know, running drills and everything else. So
one of the voices that is central to this story is that of Kyle Harrison, a longtime ambassador and STX guy.
Mm-hmm.
What is your how do you describe the experience working with Kyle?
You know, Kyle is just the guy that always brings a certain kind of energy to everything he does. And we were just talking a minute ago how he was just in town yesterday for another project we're working on for a video shoot. And he's just so easy to work with. Again, he's kind of like Jason, I guess. Like, he has that certain level of energy, and like, you don't have to explain a lot to him. You don't have to hold his hand through everything. He just gets it. You know, you either get it or you don't. And Kyle, you know, he's Kyle. He's a legend in the sport, one of the greatest ever to play, as everyone knows. But he just, again, he brings that personality. And when we first started talking about, you know, who should kind of be the voice or the voiceover of the season, you know, kicked around some ideas. You could always kind of go the safe route of like the polished voiceover guy, like the Lee Schreiber type. But then we said, well, what about Kyle? Yeah, he's never done a voiceover before. It's not really his thing, but in a lot of ways, he is the voice of lacrosse. You know, he's been the face of STX for however many years now, 10 plus years. And I think he just brings more of an authenticity to it when it is a guy like Kyle. As opposed to just some other random guy who has more of a professional trained voiceover guy. It just, Kyle has, again, that authenticity. He's been through a season. He knows what it takes to get to the very top and win the championship and go undefeated at Hopkins. And now he's, you know, winning MLL championships. So he knows exactly what these guys are going through. So to us, it was kind of the theme here. It was a no-brainer.
And, you know, he's thrown himself into it, as you can see by checking out the season2018.com. You know, one of the posts that's embedded there is from an Instagram post from November 17th. It's him sitting in front of a computer with a mic in his face. You know, he's hood up, dialed in, all focused, ready to go, ready to read, ready to make sure that this story is told as well as possible. Last thing, it's the industry podcast. We know we've got a lot of gearheads listening to this. Certainly there's a lot going on at STX as we head into the holiday season in the spring of 2018. Anything on the horizon, anything that you can, you know, kind of tease out, sprinkle in for the listeners in terms of what to keep their eyes on?
You know, we always got new stuff on the horizon, always new stuff we're going to be dropping every few months or so. Can't give away too much right now. You know, we did just you're gonna let me give a plug, I'll give a plug. We just dropped our new Stallion 700 marble heads. Those kind of our big thing right now. You know, all the new product for 2018 just hit the stores in the last few weeks, last month or so. So we got a bunch of cool new handles out there, brought back the Alliance handles. But there'll be some stuff dropping in the spring too, hopefully soon.
And I would imagine that one of the first places you'll be able to see that is on
STX.com, of course.
Well, and also the season 2018.
And the season 2018, of course. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, you'll see, you know, a lot of college teams using prototypes and stuff. You know, kids are always on Instagram looking for that kind of stuff. So
there are some Easter eggs buried in these episodes, guys. Just make sure that you put in the time to check it out.
Absolutely.
Well, Joe, we really appreciate you stopping by, joining us on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. As always, it's been great to have you, and best of luck as we continue to try to drive this ship that is the season 2018 video project. Like we said, there's so much to it. It's these weekly conference calls, man. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.